morning to each one. Turn to Proverbs chapter 30. As a congregation, we've been going through Proverbs, and today our verses are Proverbs chapter 30, verses 7 to 14. Let's read the verses. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 7. Two things have I required of thee. Deny me them not before I die. Remove me far from vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me. Lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain. Accuse not a servant unto his master, lest he curse thee and thou be found guilty. There is a generation that curses their father and does not bless their mother. There is a generation that are pure in their own eyes and yet is not washed from their filthiness. There is a generation, oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. There is a generation whose teeth are as swords and their jaw teeth as knives to devour the poor from off the earth and the needy from among men. I think Andy had mentioned a couple weeks ago, this chapter is written by Agur. The message from Solomon ended in chapter 29, the last verse. And the last two chapters are from several different men. This chapter is from Agur. Not much history on him, but it is still God's inspired word. And in verse 7, the man is Agur is asking the Lord for several things. He says, two things have I required of thee. Deny me them not before I die. And it's almost like he's saying, Lord, you have to give me something. But when you look up in the Hebrew, it says more of a request or a asking or a begging or an inquiring. It's more like he's begging the Lord, saying, please keep me honest, far from lies. Keep me honest and far from evil, idolatry, and uselessness. Vanity, the literal translation would be evil, or there's a number of different ones, idolatry or uselessness. And I thought uselessness was an interesting or a very good word put in there. It says, remove me far from vanity and lies. It takes work and training for us and a watchfulness as we get older, but for us to train our children, and without the Lord's help, it would be a discouraging battle. You can train, you can teach, you can instill disciplines in a child's life as they grow older that could be, you know, in not lying and in honesty and in those things. But it takes more than just a discipline and a training. I think that's an absolutely essential, and without that, the child doesn't have much chance as they get older. But without the Lord working in us and us teaching our children to be honest, to be useful, to be far from evil and idolatry, the child would not make it in life very far. We've met people that way that haven't been taught that, and you feel sorry for them that there's just not been a usefulness taught in their lives. Agur's asking himself for himself and giving us an example of what to ask the Lord. He said we need to guard against lies, and a lot of times it's easy not to. It's not necessarily hard to avoid telling a lie and just lying to someone's face if we've been taught that way. But a lot of times it's easy just to fudge the truth just a little bit and not have quite a clear answer in a situation. It's something for me that's tested in how to answer clearly, how to answer honestly. I remember, you know, years ago where someone had asked me something, and I remember responding but not giving the whole truth. And I remember it convicting me and having to go back and tell and just go back to him and say, you know, I didn't necessarily lie, but I didn't give you the whole truth. And I didn't want that to be a pattern of my life and have a reputation of being shady or a little dishonest. Agur also asks an interesting thing here. He says in verse 8, remove me far from vanity and lies. Then he says, give me neither poverty nor riches. He doesn't ask the Lord. He said, don't give me poverty. But he also doesn't ask for riches. Instead, he asked the Lord would not give him riches, but just take care of his needs that he has right now. And the question came to me as I was looking through this, why wouldn't he ask one way or the other? Why wouldn't he ask to be poor so that he could just trust the Lord and not have to, God would just take care of everything. You wouldn't have be tempted with too much, and you could just ask the Lord if you were poor. God would, supply your needs. Or the other side, he could ask to be rich and that he would have enough that he wouldn't have to worry about anything and he could take care of all his own needs. And in the next verse, verse 9, he gives the answer. He said, in case I be poor and steal because of his hunger and need and his want, if you're hungry and you're in desperate situations, as Aiden mentioned in Ecuador, I think Ecuador is one of the poorest countries in the world, and there would be a temptation in that kind of poverty to steal or to see someone that's better off and be covetous and want what they have and steal it. And God clearly hates stealing because in the Ten Commandments, he said, thou shalt not steal is one of the commandments. I think it's seven. But he says, thou shalt not steal. And Agur says here, if we were in that kind of poverty, we may steal and profane the name of the Lord by breaking his law. And I think we all see what stealing has done in our country. It's a rampant problem. If you go to town, you don't just leave the keys in your vehicle generally, or you might not have a car when you come back out, depending where you're at. When you go to bed at night, a lot of times you lock the doors just for the fact that you don't know if the people are trustworthy to not come into your house. I know for me, when we're out in town or something, I keep a close eye on my children, make sure they're right by me, and that way there's evil in this world that is, and it's a major problem. But I don't think it's as big of a problem as the other part of the verse. He says, lest I be full and say, who is the Lord? And I just had to ask myself the question, am I full this morning? Am I rich and in need of nothing? Have riches overtaken us and made us independent from God, or instead of being dependent on the Lord? And it's a lot of matter of comparison. If we look around us and ask, am I rich? We can always compare ourselves to people that are richer than us or that have more means, or you can always find those people. But I just got some comparisons here. When we look at the scope of the rest of the world, and Aiden mentioned a little this morning, but by our level of income and living, a very average wage in the U.S. is the top 0.5% of the world by income. So if we make an average wage of in the U.S. of, I think it's $35,000, you're in the top, or $40,000, you're in the top 0.5% of the world in what they make. What we would make in a year would take an average laborer in Ghana 281 years to make the same amount. If we're thirsty and in need of a drink to buy a Coke or something, we could work between 2 and 3 minutes and buy a can of pop, where in Indonesia it'd take around 2 hours to make enough to buy one. One of our monthly incomes would pay the salary of 200 doctors in Pakistan. You have to make less than $2,000 a year to fall into the 50% category of the world's level of living. And so if you'd make, it's a little less than 2,000, but if you make 2,000, there's 3.5 billion people that make less than you yet, and that's a net income per year. You'd be in the 50% category. And I know there's other factors our cost of living in the States here is a lot higher than the cost of living somewhere else, and some of that would come into play here. But Gary Miller, in his book On the Other Side of the Global Wall, said if the value of all of our assets exceed $10,000, we're in the category of living in and using 97% of the world's wealth. Agur says here, lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? And for me, I guess as I was looking through this, it was a reality check to me to consider our lives so full and busy, and struggling to buy the next meal is not an issue. If we want to go on a trip, we buy gas, put it in the car, and leave and go on a trip. If we need something to fix something, we go to Lowe's and buy what we need, and in reason, but and buy it and fix it. And our issue and struggle is not that we're trying to get enough food to feed our family and trying to get just enough to survive. You can look at Luke chapter 12. Verse 13. This is the account of Jesus was gathered together with an innumerable multitude of people, insomuch that they trode upon one another and began to say to his disciples, and Jesus began to say to his disciples. And then in verse 13, he says, "And one of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother, that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or divider over you? And he said unto them, Take heed, and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do, because I have no more room to bestow my fruits? And he said, This will I do, I will pull down my barns, and build greater, and there will be... There will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. This is an example of a man who was full and rich and increased in goods, and he forgot the Lord in all of his great planning in life. It seems the reason that this man was considered a fool was in verse 18 and 19. He asks, what will I do with all my stuff, all my goods that I've accumulated? He's going to build bigger barns. He's going to store more things. He's going to take it easy, just have a good time, retire, and be happy. And God said, this night you will die and your possessions will be for someone else that you are so proud of. I think the issue here is not that he obviously had a good year. He obviously had a good crop. He had a lot of income or something. But the issue was his response there, that he said he's going to store it up for himself. He's going to eat, drink, and be merry. And he laid up treasures for himself on this earth and not treasures up in heaven. I think if this man would have said, had the same exact question, and said, what shall I do because I had no more room to bestow my fruits? If he would have said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to help everyone I can. I'm going to live in the same house that I lived in that meets my needs. Whatever option I can do, I'll always remember that these are the Lord's, and the Lord gives them to us, and the Lord takes them away. And blessed be the name of the Lord, not accumulating and trying to take it easy and live off of it. I think that riches are dangerous, and the right response, the more riches increase, become harder to make that right decision. But I think we need to remember that we're not independent and that the Lord gives us those things, and the Lord can take them away at any moment. Look at verse 10 in Proverbs 30. Accuse not a servant to his master, lest he curse thee and thou be found guilty. I read this verse and reread the verse, and I was a little confused as to what he was meaning by it. But I think I'll give you my thoughts, and if anybody has some better idea on it, I'd be glad to hear it. But I think he's talking about slander here. He's talking about speaking of a servant, a employee, or someone that's working or under someone, and speaking something that appears to be not true, and trying to slander them, make them look bad or feel bad, but then in light of that, the employer or the one over them must have found out that you said something untrue and you're guilty of it. I guess it just seems he's telling us to be tenderhearted, not slandering. Don't speak hard things to people that'll run them down, because if you do, it'll come to light sometime, you'll be guilty. Verses 11 to 14 begin a group of four verses. There's six different sets in this chapter coming up of groups of four verses where he gives four different verses at a time of different things. And these are four evils in the 7 to 14. Some aren't necessarily evils, they're different. But verses 11 to 14, There's another translation that I read it in that kind of ties it together. Instead of having each one being a different generation, it says, there's a generation, or those who curse their fathers and do not bless their mothers. They are pure in their own eyes, and yet are not cleansed from their filth. Those who their eyes are ever so haughty, and their glances are so disdainful. Their teeth are as swords, and whose jaws are set like knives, to devour the poor from the earth, and the needy from among mankind. Verse 11 says that the generation that curses their father, it's speaking of children and people that are unthankful, disobedient to parents, and just rebellious. Verse 12 tells us of those living in sin who may not even know it themselves. Verse 13 warns of pride or a haughty look. And verse 14 brings us back to the poor again, and how there's a generation of people who devour the poor because they're poor and have no way of defending themselves. There's a generation, a sort of men, abominable both to God and man, which is implied concerning these and the following kind of sinners mentioned in these verses. Ones that curse their father, and mother too as it follows, ungrateful and unnatural children. There are those who are pure in their own eyes, who not only pretend to others, but sincerely think within themselves they are truly religious persons, in all respects such as they should be, and yet are not washed from their filthiness. They're not delivered from the guilt or power of their sins. They're not saved by the washing of regeneration and the renewing of the Holy Ghost. They're not justified, not sanctified in the name of the Lord, the Messiah, by the Spirit of our God. There is a generation, oh how lofty are their eyes, with what disdain do they look upon their neighbors, at what distance do they expect everybody to keep, a sort of men that are proud, insolent, advancing themselves and despising all others in comparison of themselves, and showing the pride of their hearts in their countenance and behavior. There is a generation whose teeth are as swords, and jaw teeth as knives, to devour the poor from the earth. These men are extortioners and cruel oppressors who grind the faces of the poor. Out of these verses, it just spoke that may God help us to be the generation that blesses our parents, that's thankful and obedient, that is pure and holy in God's eyes, not just ours. A generation that's humble and lowly, and a people that speak loving things and take care of the poor. That's all I have. God bless you.